Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
First up, let's take a look at the business stories and a few others of the weekend, indeed the weekend. I'm delighted to join by my colleague here at the station, Susan Hayes-Cullerton, the host of Talking Stock, as well as being the positive economist, taking stock even, as well as being the positive economist, and also joined by Robert Whelan of Rockwell Finance. Morning to you, Robert.
Good
and
morning,
Susan.
Bobby.
Thanks.
Morning, Bobby.
What a beautiful day it is out there. So we're going to start with not the weather, but about the NTMA, Susan. You know, it just shows that anybody can be scammed, according to the Daily Mail here today. A 5 million scam outrage.
I think that the main story is exactly that, Bobby, is just how vulnerable any organisation is. So the piece here that is written by Craig Hughes is that that the NTMA has been scammed out of 5 million euro. Basically, somebody who had a lot of inside knowledge rang up, had a deep fake, got through the security protocols and ultimately led to 5 million euro being taken from there. But I think myself that the key issue here is that we need to be so, so vigilant, particularly as business owners. There's two clients that we have where even the fact that we're in their supply chain, we need to go to mandatory cybersecurity training. And I think that's becoming more and more evident. And it's very good that both of those trainings are very, very good. And it just shows that prevention can be extraordinarily impactful. And the other thing, too, is that we went through it a couple of years ago. We applied for the Digital Start funding for the local enterprise office. We brought in a cybersecurity analyst, and the amount of things that you can do to prevent things like this happening is really significant. But secondly, it's so important that it can be done. And the other part of this story is that Piers Doherty is now saying that they need to come in front of the Oireachtas committee to explain how he said that as an organisation that is responsible for billions of euro of Irish money led to this vulnerability.
And we'll be coming to Piers Doherty a bit later on. But Robert, maybe there's a little bit of sensationalism here from the Irish Mail. There is an inference certainly that the NTMA is the custodian of large amounts taxpayers' money, so that, you know, that there's an inference here that because it's them, we should be concerned as taxpayers.
Yeah. Listen, ultimately, as taxpayers, of course, you want accountability from the people who are managing your money. I think if you get into the bones of the story, it was from the ISIF fund, which I would say what happens is they would lend money to usually private lenders. And somebody obviously manipulated that particular situation to fraudulently present themselves, maybe as one of the lenders, if you read into it. But 5 million is 5 million. And I suppose the thing for me is that the Department of Finance were only informed, according to this, to the reporter, that the Department of Finance were only informed of the issue after queries from the Daily Mail. Yeah. And again, it's about accountability in these sectors. Why wasn't the Department of Finance notified? At the end of the day, there should be a chain of command, and that should have been reported. So that would concern me as a taxpayer as much as anything else. We're allowed to make mistakes, but Susan's point is well made. As a small business, I just renewed my cyber insurance 2 months ago. It's a condition of that every member of my staff has to conduct cybersecurity training. And every month, a new module is released. It's a half an hour video, and I have to pass a test at the end of it. Every month we have to. But when you're dealing with people's money as well, you have to be very.
The Irish economy, a couple of stories on this, and indeed the European economy, Susan. A story you'll be very interested in. The Irish economy predicted to grow by more than 4%. It's 4% for 4 years. Very easy to remember that. And also then, if we parallel that with the growth in the Eurozone, it looks like we're going to outperform our EU colleagues in a significant way.
And we've been doing that for quite some time, Bobby, that is for sure. So Emer Walsh in The Examiner, she particularly refers to a Davy report here. And I'll just paraphrase the main points here. And that is, the economy is driven by more people in the workforce earning more. That's basically where she says, and Davy says, that the resilience of the economy is coming from. Now, I think the figure of 4% growth through 2027 is, I think that might be slightly ambitious. And the reason that I say that is, you've referred to it in the conversations you're going to be having later on today around Trump and around the, you know, all of the things to do with the tariffs and so on like that. And particularly when she refers to the fact that Davy expects that we should be taking in corporation tax receipts in excess of 30 billion annually.
I was kind of surprised that there was
That's the thing is that, I mean, you know, if we think about where that's coming from, first of all, obviously the companies need to be here. And I think, to be fair, the likelihood is that they will be. But if we are looking at maybe changes in global trade, if we're looking at changes in where parts of manufacturing might be happening, when we look at the inflation story then that goes on in the Eurozone piece, that 30 billion is a big assumption. And of course, then that also assumes the companies are profitable that lead to that. Now, a big thing that she mentions, and of course she needs to mention it, as does the report, is about the risk related to housing, due to the fact that if we don't have more housing, then we can't be as competitive.
And we're going to be 5,000 houses short in the short term.
Yeah, and that, again, I think that might be slightly ambitious too.
Yeah.
But what I do think is very important, and I think we often don't talk enough about this, sorry, that's an oxymoron, but it's the piece that she mentions at the very end. She said about the focus of the single market, particularly a functional capital markets union. This is a really, really interesting development, and I think Ireland needs to lobby so much harder for this. 70 trillion euro are sitting at the moment in savings right across the European Union, and that's an enormous amount of money. €10 trillion, which is 70% of our savings. It's an enormous amount of money that could be channeled into better ways. It's a game of two halves when you compare it to what's going on in the Eurozone. We've got anemic growth. Everyone is talking, including myself, about the fact that we have greater defence spending announced in Germany. The stock market responded very, very well to that. But that is only that. And it's just interesting now how, when it comes to fiscal rules, the argument is that, yes, you can break them to increase defence spending, but you shouldn't be breaking them all the time. And let's just see how often they'll be broken in the years to come.
Robert, what are your thoughts on this? Is it a different story if we look at Europe versus Ireland?
Absolutely. But as Susan said, that seems to have been the story over the last few years.
Yeah.
And it's primarily because we've been leveraging off of our relationship, obviously, with our friends across the Atlantic. But it is good to see that there is growth within the Eurozone. And from my side of things, the story here is, and I know the multinational number does jump out in terms of the corporation tax receipts, but ultimately, if you look at small business continues to thrive. New businesses are being set up all the time. And I think it's good for people who are looking at the Irish economy and seeing the prospect of growth being there in the future, and that Ireland continues to outperform our international colleagues, particularly, and there's no mention here of the UK and the mess that is over there. And I think ultimately, it's easy to be the bad news story all the time, but I just think sometimes it's, and I think that it is optimistic. And fundamentally, housing is the biggest issue in the country. And if you look at what the IMF are saying about Europe, they're basically saying that with increased defence spending, you're going to see a loosening of fiscal rules, which ultimately will lead to probably, and Susan will be more well-versed talking about this than me, but I think we're going to see closer and closer integration on, certainly financially, over the next 10 to 15 years in Europe, because we'll have no choice, because with what's going on in America, if they've gone isolation,
we're going to have to group together.
We're going to have to come together.
We are, but I think it's also important as well, like, that closer integration of a bloc is really important, and I agree with that, just as I mentioned. But also, we have to look at how Europe is competing as a bloc when it comes to China, when it comes to green energy and AI, when it comes to the US and productivity. So closer integration of a bloc is one side, but how we actually look outside and compete is a really, really important point as well.
And the forecast European inflation is 2%. Conor Pope is telling us that food inflation in Ireland is way higher than that, 5.3% over the last 3 months, something around 3,000 a year for the average family. Things like butter up over 1.10 euro, cheese up €1 per kilo, milk up 27 cents for a litre, and eggs up plus 40%. So we're not the only, Donald Trump isn't the only one concerned about the price of eggs, is he?
No, he's not. Look, I mean, what Conor Pope is talking about here is what people are really feeling in their pocket. And you know, while you touched on it there, Bobby, I just want to reinforce the point that he makes around about a third of the way through the piece, which is that in 2021, for every 100 euro that we were spending in our shopping, and on a standardised basis, it's now costing us €130. And that's a really significant point. Now, he particularly talks about the fact that this is driven by a range of things. Obviously, there was the pricing relating to the pandemic and the shortage that was happening there. Then there was the invasion of Russia and Ukraine. And we often talk about that as because of the invasion from Russia, because of the decrease in the, or the, yeah, the decrease in the access that we had to their gas that had pushed up energy prices. But Ukraine was a massive exporter of wheat and of grains and of things that fundamentally go into the things that...
Funnily, bread isn't mentioned.
I am surprised that it wasn't, but he mentioned everything else you'd have for the breakfast, like butter and coffee. And then, but then he also talks about beef and chocolate and other things too. But what I think the important point is, ordinarily when you listen to Conor Pope, at the end he will say, here's three or five things you can do. This time he's saying there's very little that is likely to change. Yeah. And due to supply chain issues, greater costs to do with storage, the geopolitical unrest, he's basically saying this is here to stay and household budgets need to react accordingly.
And beef is up 22%, chocolate up 17.5%. I know those beef prices are finding their way into an already challenged hospitality sector.
Absolutely. Like if you looked at the one of the, someone is lying, by the way. So you have the retailers saying, oh, we're not price gouging. And the farmers are saying, there's a quote here.
We're
not making any money either. So like someone is making money here. So I just kind of say either the retailer is making money or the farmer is making money or someone who's selling the grain. And I understand, obviously, like dairy farmers will be lighting up the phones going, we're not making it. But the bottom line is that there is a strong correlation between beef prices up 22%, cheese and butter prices being up 17-30%, and somebody has to be profiting from that somewhere along the line.
But is it not simply the rise in the cost base? I mean, you know, when you look at...
I would challenge that, Susan. I think I looked at it, if you looked at it in construction, it's not related here, but if you looked at the massive increase in EBITDA of businesses who are supplying into the construction sector over the last 12 months, you're seeing EBITDA increases of 30 to 35% based on revenue increases of 5 or 6%. So there is a degree of margin grabbing there. And I think ultimately what we may be seeing is suppliers into this sector seeing a market that could absorb that type of pricing and going, oh, so we can actually charge that. And like any business, if someone is prepared to pay you more for your services and you can do it, you can slowly but surely increase your margin there. They're not publicly reported.
And the basic premise, the customer always pays, Susan.
Well, yes, but I mean, right, let's look at what EBITDA is, right? It's earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, amortization. So I would also argue that that businesses, now I'm not necessarily going to look at the construction sector on its own, but we've seen an awful lot of margin narrowing over the past while. And again, margin is simply the percentage of money that people get out of profit that they get out of revenue. Is it not simply responding to normalization? Because there's been a real, real squeeze, particularly anyone who's been in the food business, of which obviously we're sharing the studio here with a man who knows all about it, namely you, Bobby. Like, I mean, I would imagine that if there is margin expansion, it is a normalisation, because particularly the food sector has been through massive, massive squeezes.
Just on a lighter note, I suppose a related piece. Who owns Super Value, Robert? Whatever you do, don't ask Sinn Féin.
Definitely don't be asking Sinn Féin. So someone in Sinn Féin's research department is getting a strongly worded email. So yeah, the long and the short of it is that Piers Doherty rushed out to complain about the price of groceries, and he's right, obviously. But unfortunately, he named not Musgrave, by the way, who do actually own
the Irish Super Value.
Super Value, yeah. No, they named United Natural Foods Incorporated, and they
which is a US supermarket chain that is not connected at all with Super Value.
Not at all. Well, not, and so they were saying that their stock price increased by 60% in the last year, and again, a basic Google search would tell you that Musgraves are privately owned, and God knows what the profits are, but. Very interesting.
So, interesting business story. Flutter's FanDuel unit valued at $31 billion after buying a final 5%. This is actually an amazing business story.
It is indeed. So John Mulligan talks about the fact that Flutter, and for anybody who's unfamiliar with the name Flutter, they are the company that owns Paddy Power. And
formerly Paddy Power.
Formerly Paddy Power, yeah. But they include, we'll say that might be the brand that people might be familiar with. What I'm struck by here is, so first of all, FanDuel is a unit that is primarily based in the US. It's valued at $31 billion and it has increased in value from $20 billion in 2020, which is an enormous growth. But what I'm interested by here is the fact that when you look at the valuation of the business, currently Flutter is now worth $51 billion. If you take away FanDuel, which is worth $31 billion, it now says that the Flutter investors are roughly penciling in $20 billion valuation on the remainder of the business, including Paddy Power and Betfair. However, if you look at the revenue, on the other hand then, Flutter generated revenue of 14 billion last year.
Of which nearly six was from FanDuel.
Yes, but if you work out the maths there, Bobby, in that case, you've got around about a third of the revenue coming from FanDuel and yet 60% of the value of the business is now from there.
Yeah, well, it's the American market that's just opening up.
And I was about to say, the difference is the revenue possibilities as a result of where it's going and then also potentially moving into Canada as well.
It's
but it just shows how investors are looking at the growth of one business. And
saying, the numbers are huge here.
They are, and they're leading.
And the market, the size of the market, like they've referenced here, obviously, the California, 40 of the 50 US states have regulated, legalized gambling. California hasn't, but that's the big kahuna and it will fall. But the potential for the US market is enormous. And it obviously the market are pricing that in. And again, it's a great news story. This is obviously an Irish business at the end of the day. And look at them now, worth $51 billion.
Great. I'm delighted to report that. June sees the 50% jump in new car sales. EVs are up 38%. Some interesting stats, because there was some concern about the engagement around EVs, firstly with Musk doing his self-destruct thing, with, you know, I think people have been talking about range anxiety, talking about the poor infrastructure. There seemed to be a cooling, the devaluation, the depreciation, accelerated depreciation of EV cars. So the market seems to be telling us that there's growth here again.
Well, first of all, there is growth. I think there's one other element going on there that I'll refer to in a moment. But just to give a sense to listeners, first of all, so Alan Healy and Hugh Dooley talk about this. And fundamentally, what it comes down to is that nearly one third of new cars in the first half of the year are now electric vehicles. And there's a range of statistics in here around what percentage of people are now buying electric cars in comparison. But the thing that I would like to bring up here is Dad and myself went car shopping there a couple of weeks ago. And the reality is you can't get diesel cars anymore. Like the actual availability of the petrol in the diesel car is really decreasing.
Is that right? I didn't realise that.
It is. And I think when you look here, like both of these pieces suggest that people are choosing A over B. And certainly when we were in the showroom that day, there are more and more. Now, I support it. But I do think that that's another issue. Everything you said there, Bobby, we have discussed on the show over the years about the depreciation, the secondhand market, the range anxiety, all of those things. But if there's fewer available of one rather than the other, that is a big driving force in here.
We don't have much time, so I want to talk about the apartment plan.
Absolutely,
Robert.
Yeah.
Leading to more delays, few savings, experts warn. And then Orla Hegarty, who's, I think, a known voice around this space from the Department of Architecture and Planning up in UCD.
Yeah.
She has her views on it. But one of the things that I was just is about they've basically, I think in square feet rather than square metres. So an apartment has gone from a required size of 400 square feet to 345 square feet. If you take an average tennis court, it's 2,800 square feet.
Yeah.
You can get eight apartments of these studio apartments, eight of them, into the size of a tennis court.
Yeah.
Like, does that not... We'll be talking later about data in pictures.
Yeah.
Like, just try and imagine.
It's incredible, isn't it? Yeah. And obviously, this is obviously the coming on foot. This is from Niamh Toohey in The Times. And it's on foot of obviously Minister James Brown's announcement that he is deciding to, let's just say, loosen the regulations around the size of properties. There's two competing things here. His main point is around cost, is that ultimately this will bring down the cost of these units, which will ultimately hopefully drive more development of the units. And obviously, we have a housing crisis. So let's hopefully that 1 + 2 = 3.
And some of the independent, Paul Mitchell, Director of Construction, Mitchell McDermott, he's saying that savings about 28 to 39K per unit.
Yeah, absolutely. Whereas the minister was saying 50 to 100,000. Yeah. So it's like, obviously, the truth is going to be there somewhere in the
like
middle.
A bit like groceries. Who's making the money here, Robert?
Exactly. Yeah, well, absolutely. Definitely. And I suppose this is the challenge we have as a country, is that we need more properties. People need more properties. But in order to do that, we're trying to... This is the minister's attempt at it. Obviously, Orla Hegarty is extremely concerned about it. She's compared it to Russia Russian Khrushchev era blocks of flats, and that's a strong image. I would contend, just for devil's advocacy's sake, we're constantly trumpeting Paris and Vienna as livable cities, whereas the average size of a one bed unit in Paris is smaller than the one they're proposing.
Yeah. Or if you look at London, even
absolutely.
What did you think of this, Susan?
What I think stood out here was what Orla, as I was reading through what Minister James Brown had put forward, I was in agreement. As I said, okay, yes, you're right indeed, Robert, that it was about decrease in cost of varying measures. But what I was particularly interested in was the increase in supply, because, of course, that's the real issue that's needed. On the other hand, though, Orla Hegarty convinced me in this single line. She said, Brown has incentivised 78% more units but housed 41% fewer people. And
but,
I think
but
that's
we do know, and again, there's evidence out there that when we moved in on the bed sits, the increase in homelessness.
Absolutely.
Actually, so there is a market for this type of accommodation.
Well, Ronan Lyons in particular does a fabulous report every year about the Irish property market. And he's been for 7 years, I get it every year, talking about we're great at building 3-bed MEDs, but the biggest need in this country is 1-bed apartments. He said, I remember he said it 7 or 8 years ago. And he's 100% right, because you have an increased rate of divorce, marital breakdown. You have people who are staying single into their 30s now. So there is a market for it. I'm not saying it's for everything by any means, but I do think Orla's point is well made. But there's a lot of apartments where it's an empty bed. There's a lot of 4 beds where there's 2 empty rooms. So you could theoretically house X amount of people in that. I get her point. She's about living standards and quality. I would just contend that there is a market for it.
But I think the fundamental point here is that there's no one would disagree that we need more apartments. Mm. But it is the fact that we simply need studio apartments. I stayed in one of those in Malta when I was out there doing business back in 2011. And you don't have room.
Tax evasion, I hope not.
Export business, that's what it was. I would have loved to have had the tax to actually try to think
about.
Well,
I hear Malta. I just, sorry, Susan.
I pledge you to tell you about that now. Malta, that is.
Finally, would you go swimming in the Seine? We were talking about Paris. They have opened up swimming again there. There's apparently... they've tried it a few times over the years. People used to do it in the old days. They stopped it for decades, but now there are 3 places. There's also been an increase of 27 species. There were only 3 types of fish in the Seine. Now there are 30. So isn't this wonderful, I think? Regardless of what it costs, that people are actually swimming in a river in a capital city.
Yes,
I think it's wonderful.
It is, yep. They're braver than I'd be now. But I mean, look, I love Paris. I think it's a beautiful city. But if you ask me to get into the Seine, I would say, you know what now? You go first, Bobby, and we'll see how you get on.
It brought back memories to me. Do you remember the Liffey and the Liffey swim? And a friend of mine did a Liffey swim a few years ago and got awful sick. And do you remember the time and the slime? Remember the Millennium Clock?
Yes.
As a veteran of the Nor swim, we'll leave it on that note. Thank you to my guests, Robert, and indeed Susan. Enjoy the beautiful weather out there for the weekend.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.